and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is the clock ticking for Ukraine's former President Zelensky? It certainly appears so. It is hard to imagine him clinging to power after his arrogant meltdown in the Oval Office. Can the Europeans save him? Doubtful. Maybe the Ukrainian people should decide his fate. Crosstalking Zelensky, I'm joined by my guest, Matthew Crosston in Washington. He is a professor of national security and director of academic transformation at Bowie State University. In Virginia, we have James Jatris. He is a former U.S. diplomat and a former advisor to U.S. Senate Republican leadership. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to cut to the chase, Jim. You in Virginia here. The question of this fundamental question of this program is Zelensky finished? Are we seeing him exiting the stage? Jim?
I think the odds are very good he'll be gone by May 1st, just pulling a number out of my ear here. I mean, look, as Trump said to him in Washington, he doesn't hold any cards. And everybody knows that's true. And the Europeans are still supporting him. But you know what? They don't hold any cards either. They don't have the money. They don't have the military equipment. They don't have the military production capacity. So they can talk a brave game, but unless they somehow can get the Americans back on board to backstop them for their boots on the ground and planes in the air, as Mr. Starmer put it, they're out of luck too. At this point, only the Americans and the Russians matter, and they will decide what happens next. And Zelensky can fume all he wants. I think the real question is whether his sponsors in CIA or MI6 or wherever else decide that he needs to go. Maybe we'll put him from Vietnam, we'll put him on the per diem plan if he won't leave.
Well, and Matthew, all the more so. I mean, if you look at it, there's a silver lining to this. I mean, his awful behavior in the Oval Office, it gives a reason, gives the Trump administration to say, hey, we're done with this guy, okay? They didn't like him in the first place. He's a grifter. It is well known. And Trump has made it very clear that he has no interest in furthering a war Biden started senselessly involving the United States in a confrontation, a proxy war with Russia. Trump has bigger ideas. So Zelensky did him a favor. Matthew.
To a certain degree, that's true. I'm always a little hesitant when we start replacing leaders and we're not exactly sure
next. Hang on. At the end of my introduction, I said maybe the Ukrainian people should decide his fate. So I covered all my bases there. Go ahead, Matthew.
No, I know. And it's not even so much about that. It's more about, I just feel Russia has also been very, very adamant over the years now saying, we don't really care who's in office in Kyiv,
right,
as long as the neighborhood itself behaves the way we feel that it should. And we're the greatest power in the neighborhood. And there's a certain amount of respect and a certain amount of acquiescence, and I don't mean that in a negative way, is paid attention to the greatest power of that neighborhood. Zelensky could be in place in Kyiv as long as he sort of understood what the roles and the relationships are meant to be. And that's always been his biggest problem.
You know, Jim, there's the French UK plan that they want to pass over to Trump envisions, I'm quoting here, temporary month-long truce in the air, on the seas, and on energy infrastructure. And then that's when Western troops will come in. It's not been very well explained to me, Jim. Is this a unilateral truce on the part of the Ukrainians? Are the Russians supposed to be invited into this truce? Because no one's asked them. And, oh, I'll tell you, they're not interested. So what is all this bluster coming out of Europe? These are all non-starters. Jim?
Well, yes, exactly. If the Russians don't agree to it and these troops enter in essentially as combatants, I don't think that's what the British and French have in mind. Starmer and Macron came to Washington to try to sweet talk Trump into backstopping them, without which this is totally unviable. As far as Zelensky goes, if he had half a brain, he would just come here, sign that stupid mineral deal, which doesn't mean much of anything, and said, yes, Mr. President, thank you, Mr. President, hoping that he would get somehow the same kind of buy-in that Starmer and Macron were trying to arrange. At this point, I don't know. I think they're still going to go back to the well and try to find some way to tell the Americans, if you can arrange a truce with the Russians say they won't settle for a ceasefire. They only want a permanent settlement. But I think that's still where their head is at. That's what they're going to try to do. I don't see how it's going to work.
Yeah, Matthew, I mean,
I think there's also, Peter, if I could just real quick jump in, is just that I've always believed one of the biggest flaws of what happened in the Oval Office last week was the simple fact that when Zelensky has spent 3 years traveling all over the world, let alone Western Europe, but all over the world, where he has been constantly feted and lauded and praised, and you can sort of buy into your own Kool-Aid. You know, you're drinking your own Kool-Aid at that point. And I think he probably came to Washington, D.C. thinking, well, I'll be able to influence Trump despite whatever Trump has said in the past as far as what his positions are. And maybe, as James mentions, the French and the English also thought they'd be able to maneuver that. But it's always amazed me in this conflict overall is that certain sides have always stated very unequivocally where they stand and what they believe in. And just the other side has tended to say, well, you don't really mean that, though, right? We can change that, can't we? And they're like, no, you can't change that. This is what we believe. And we just refuse to buy into what they're telling us. And that's put us into problems.
Matthew, just to follow up on what you're saying, I've been reading reports earlier today that Zelensky had been meeting with congressional Democrats. And it's been suggested through this reporting that he take the stand that he did in the Oval Office, believing that Trump would be a pushover. And obviously that didn't work out well. It's the Democratic Party that's also the problem here, Matthew. Wouldn't you agree?
If that's true, and if that's true, I would say what that really indicates more than anything else is how much the Democratic Party has still not learned any lessons from the election it just lost, that it's taking positions that are untenable, it's taking positions that are not realistic, and as a result, defeat comes from it. So yeah, that's actually disappointing.
Jim, I mean, again, if you just look at the main broadsheets in legacy media, they keep talking about a European peace plan, but they're not talking about peace at all. They're talking about the continuation of the conflict. And somehow, I hate using the term, but creating a backstop where the Americans will come to the rescue. The Europeans are not talking about peace at all. They want war. They are the party of war. Jim.
At his speech at Munich, Hegseth said if a force goes in, it could not be a NATO force with an Article 5 guarantee. But this is, I think, not only the Democrats, but I think the Europeans also want to try to trick the Trump administration into approving such a backstop, knowing that it would not be there to police a peace, but find some way to continue the war and get the Americans involved in this war with a NATO force. So I don't think it was just the Democrats advising Zelensky to do this. I think with some voices from Europe as well, I would say primarily from Great Britain, because after all, Keir Starmer now thinks he's the leader of the free world. So I think there's a bigger agenda going on here. Because look, Zelensky is not his own man. He doesn't have much agency. He's a puppet for the people who pull his strings. The question was, who pulled his strings when he met with Trump?
Yeah, well, and I think Matthew's right. He's been drinking his own Kool-Aid here, never be getting a pushback here. Von der Leyen, the so-called president of the European Commission, she is just in the last few hours, Europe is going to, she announced a 150 billion euro defense plan, Matthew. Where's that money going to come from? And did anybody in the European Union, was anybody asked about that? Okay. I mean, they want a perpetual war. They want militarization of the European economy, which is in the dumps right now. That can only come from cutting social welfare programs. Not a good idea, Matthew.
No, and also, it's sort of to an earlier point you were mentioning, Peter. I've written about this quite extensively, and it's not a popular opinion here in America, but most of this positioning, that terms of propping up Ukraine militarily in this conflict for the entire 3 years, it never really had a possible realistic objective of winning a war, as in upside Russia is defeated, the war is over, and Ukraine wins. Instead, what happens is just simply we use Ukraine as the meat grinder, and we just sort of inflict damage and weaken Russia as much as we can just for the sake of doing it. And that's really the only true objective. And that is the one area, what I've tried to mention, before people accuse me of being a shill for Russia or I'm in the back pocket of Putin alongside Trump, is the simple fact that this is hurting Ukraine when you have this position. Because it's, as you mentioned, it's an endless stalemate. It's a the meat grinder is in Ukraine. It's not anywhere else. So if you just continue a war with no end, the people ultimately you're hurting is the Ukrainians more than anyone else.
Yeah, well, essentially, the reason why they're doing this is because Ukraine is losing, and it's losing badly, Jim, and this is where we get this desperation here. I mean, you know, looking at the proclamations coming out of Europe, I call it officially sponsored paranoia. The Russians are going to take Paris any minute now. Didn't you know that, Jim?
Well, you know, in addition to everything that's just been said, I think there's another institutional ingredient. Look, we've seen raised for the first time by Elon Musk, by Representative Massey, I think Senator Lee from Utah, the idea that the Americans might actually leave NATO. And of course, this is something I've been, you know, calling for years, because remember, unlike a treaty that has to get through the Senate, the president could pull us out by his own signature, just like Trump did from the INF treaty and Bush did with the ABM treaty. I think that terrifies them and also terrifies the EU. Because what is the EU? It's not much more than NATO's concubine. So you've got people like, Fond of Lion and Kaya Kallas or somebody like this. I think they're terrified that at some point, if the Americans cut Europe loose, the individual European countries are going to start looking out for their own interests rather than what these bureaucracies tell them.
Or, Jim, as we hit the break here, maybe if the U.S. will pull out its backstop, as they say, the Europeans would sober up and actually negotiate something. They're incapable right now, but they might have to be forced. All right, on that note, gentlemen, exactly. I'm gonna jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Zelensky. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Zelensky. Okay, now we're joined by Patrick Henningsen in Plymouth. He is the editor and founder of 21stCenturyWire.com. Welcome to the program, Patrick, belatedly, but welcome. I don't know how much of the program you've already heard, but I want to go right to the UK Prime Minister. He said this in the last news cycle. Russia is a menace in our waters, in our airspace, and on our streets. Obviously, he's trying to imitate Churchill in some form or another. Very badly, I would say. So, Patrick, you're in Plymouth right now, right? Right now?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay, can you look out the window? Are there any Russian troops on the streets?
No, unfortunately.
If I'm listening to the UK Prime Minister, that's the assumption that you draw. Patrick.
I hate to disappoint you, Peter. Yeah, there's no sign at all of the Red Army patrolling the streets of Plymouth. No, this is the fetishization of history, the Hitlerization of the Russian president. These are all problems that are emblematic of everything that has gotten Europe into this mindset right now, which is a very dangerous mindset, and they can't pull themselves out. It's just quite extraordinary that Keir Starmer is, I think Politico called him the leader of the free world now, according to the headline this morning. And it's so funny how it's kind of brought Britain back together with Europe, you know, Brexit and everything, bury the hatchet. We're all together, all for one for all. And this is called, this is Euro-NATO now. This is NATO without the United States. But the problem is the main card that they've been playing for the last 3 years is the threat of an Article 5 trap or like a tripwire. And are they going to get that Article 5 trap without the United States? You see, because everything hinges on that threat of the ultimate war that breaks out. If attack on one is an attack on all, this is what everybody has been bandying about in Europe in order to poke Russia. And Ukraine was supposed to be that ultimate tripwire. Zelensky himself said, this is my mission. This is the reason for my existence, is to bring Ukraine into NATO. And if that's not going to happen, which doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, but he was on the casting couch and he got the job. Okay, so I'm not sure if it's his mission. It was the people that hired them. Matthew, you know, we had the French president again in the last news cycle. That, you know, if we don't, and I'm paraphrasing right now, if we don't stop the Russians now, they're going to be in Moldova and Romania. I mean, does he have any knowledge of geography? Do his advisors have any knowledge of geography? How are they going to get there? They're going to have to go through all of Ukraine. I mean, these people are imbeciles, Matthew.
Well, I think what's funny is how we don't even have to go that far back into history. We can do just more recent history, modern history, to know the absurdity of the paranoia that it was just spoken about. Is Russia didn't do anything when the Baltics joined NATO. It didn't do anything when Poland joined NATO. It didn't do anything when Hungary joined NATO. It didn't do anything when Czechia joined NATO. But now that they were flirting with Ukraine, and it always said all from the very beginning, Ukraine is our red line. We can't allow this for multiple and many reasons. Please believe us that we're not bluffing. And we challenge the bluff, obviously. But so you're telling me that Russia is going to spend 3 years going through the meat grinder that's Ukraine, and that's their leaping pad into the earlier places that they could have jumped without any interference? It's illogical. It's illogical and irrational. So it just makes you have to ask, why do we talk that way? And I think it was mentioned earlier by our new guest, is that feeds the panic that has its own agenda and interest in Europe. If we can make people afraid of the Russians again the way we used to be afraid of the Soviets, then we can do certain things in our own neighborhood that we want to have done. Defense-wise, militarily, European power-wise.
Yeah, well, Jim, I would advise Europeans to be afraid of their leaders. They're more of a threat to their life than the Russians are. You know, Jim, it's interesting is that, you know, we've had NATO, which is the European security architecture, was designed without Russia and against Russia. They want to redo this all over again. They do not want to be in a position, the Europeans, that is, to negotiate with the Russians. That's the fundamental error, Jim.
Well, that's right. I mean, look, what was the original formula? Americans in, Russians out, Germans down. And you can write that large as Europeans down. You know, we talked earlier about will the Ukrainian people at some point decide to replace Zelensky? I mean, I remember the other Russian demands are denazification, demilitarization. Something's got to change in what is ever left of Ukraine. And I think the same fear exists in other European capitals that the leaders they currently have, these people who are really, I think, traitors to their own nations, they need to be replaced as well, too. At some point, the peoples of Europe, whether, you know, the English, Germans, the French, whoever, need to decide that they need better leaders than the ones they have now.
You know, Patrick, over the last few weeks, I've been debating and discussing with my guests a Yalta 2.0, and more specifically, Nixon goes to China in reverse. I think this is, you know, this is what Trump is thinking about. If he can do it, I don't know. But I think that's what really motivates him. And on top of it, you know, when you have the British and the Ukrainians yelling at the top of their lungs, Trump remembers Russia, Russia, Russia. They're not scoring any points with him at all. Is Trump thinking big picture? And I want my audience to know I have a lot of problems with Trump's foreign policy, but not on this issue. Patrick.
You know, when you say Yalta 2.0, Peter, you know, that's
I don't, I don't the say winners. I don't say it in a negative way. I don't think it's a dirty word.
No, it's not. It's not. But remember, Yalta was the winners of World War II coming together. So what Trump is doing is trying to reposition himself to be on the winning side. He doesn't want to go down with this disastrous proxy war, this vanity project, as I like to call it, NATO's vanity project, Europe's vanity project. Trump wants to be on that Yalta stage with Vladimir Putin and whoever else is sensible and sane enough to want to sit next to them to make it a trifecta. So this is the other problem, is that Europeans have sculpted the language. You guys have talked about this previously, this unprovoked war or Putin's war of choice, the full-scale invasion. There's a reason for this. And even all the tropes about the Budapest Memorandum and Russia invading Georgia in 2008, all these things are on, these watchwords are on heavy rotation because they want to preclude any change chance of diplomacy. So they've been building a narrative that Russia can't be trusted to do diplomacy. They'll never abide by any. Zelensky did it again when he sat in the Oval Office. Putin has violated all the ceasefires. Yeah. Putin violated the Minsk agreements. We tried, but Putin can't be trusted. That's what this is for. And then the other thing is reparations. The whole thing about Ukraine being destroyed, most of the damage is in Russian control, is going to be in Russian controlled areas. They're going to be doing the reconstruction. Russia is. But they want to extract reparations. Well, what's that? That's the $300 billion plus in Russian assets and reserves and escrow in Euroclear. So they're making a play for that, parlaying that as, quote, reparations. And then the reparations, that pie gets shared amongst Western Europeans and perhaps America, BlackRock, and whoever. Yeah. It's a heist is what it is.
It's a caper, is
what it is. Peter, can I just add to what Patrick's saying? Because I think there's a really great point to that isn't being talked about here in the States, at least, that when it comes to Yalta 2.0 or only Nixon could go to China, really a critical element of both of those situations was that in terms of, in this case, the quote-unquote adversary, Russia and China were respected, like, as legitimate yep. partners on a global stage. Yep. And there are too many actors on the Western side right now that are really steadfast, determined to prevent Russia from having that kind of position, that it well, cannot be allowed to have any respect on the global stage. And Russia has spoken about this openly for years, is that part of this maneuvering in Ukraine has been the idea that we will make you see us, because up to now you refuse to see us. You will not listen and you won't see. So this is the only thing you're going to respond to. And it's just ridiculous, because when you see what's going on in Gaza, in the sense of the full-scale invasion, just Google image Gaza and Google image downtown Kiev, and let me see if you can compare full-scale invasions.
I got you. That's absolutely spot on here. Jim, I could see you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just to pick up on what you said about Nixon to China and what Matthew said about providing some respect to Russia. I mean, look, China and the Soviet Union were very much at odds back in the days of Nixon. I think that part of the thinking in Washington would be not only can we do a reverse Nixon to China, but we can somehow drive the Russians and the Chinese apart. I think that's part of whatever strategic thinking is going on. I'm sure the Russians are aware of that, and that's not going to work. So I think part of the basis of what is seems to be the attempt here on the part of Washington isn't going to come to fruition.
Yeah, Patrick, I've taken on board what you said about the winners at Yalta. Absolutely brilliant observation. And that's what Trump wants, because he wants the major powers, going back to an early 20th century, 19th century paradigm. The only difference is the UK is not at the table, and that's why they're so angry. They've made themselves so irrelevant. Go ahead.
And I'll say this is the big danger right now, is if the United States pulls out of Ukraine or is not occupying that diplomatic and that geopolitical space, there's a danger that in that vacuum, someone else can slide in and cause a lot of trouble, like Britain, for instance, that would drag the United States back in later after provocations against Russia. Who's been behind all these provocations? Every time there's been a potential breakthrough, all of a sudden Zelensky attacks targets inside mainland Russia. This happened time and time again, or something happens. And so these provocations could really cause trouble, and it could force the U.S. back in. That, to me, is a huge risk. And Trump and the United States have to be very careful that they don't, succumb to that kind of an outcome, because that could potentially be a disaster that is going to cause a whole another phase of problems.
In my defense, I got a lot of pushback a few weeks ago, even a couple of months ago, that I said this could always escalate. And now I think this is where we are right now. The foolishness and short-sightedness of the Europeans. They obviously want to escalate. I hope the Russians and Trump don't fall for it. Gentlemen, absolutely fascinating conversation. Much appreciated. And that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Virginia, and in Plymouth. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.